And we're live with our 323rd episode of Absolute AppSec. I'm Ken Johnson at CK Tricky on social media, joined by my co-host, Seth Law at Seth Law on social media. Seth, say hi.
Hi. How's everybody doing today? We are back. Excited to be here as always. We have a few things to talk about today. The world is on fire as usual. But I did want to give heads up. There are a couple of training opportunities. I know anybody that's listened to the podcast knows we will be at Black Hat and DEF CON. Looks like both courses will happen based on the current numbers that we have. So please sign up. If you are waiting for that confirmation, you have it now. We're working through logistics, making sure that we're going to be there for both of those courses. You can see them both and find links to them at training.absoluteappsec.com or go to the respective conference websites if you have questions. Now, if you would like to talk about it and jump into Slack. Again, you do have to get a Slack invite from us or one of the moderators to do that. Reach out via email Seth or Ken at absoluteappsec.com, and we will get you a Slack invite. Just that's due to some impersonation issues that we had earlier, or that I had earlier, I should say. Outside of that, there are going to be more training opportunities this year. We've got a couple other conferences coming up later in the year. We'll announce soon enough. And yeah. I don't know, Ken. What is on your mind? I know we've got our articles, but over the last couple of weeks, I missed out last week because I was at B-Sides Vancouver. Shout out to the B-Sides Vancouver crew. That's a great conference. It's probably one of the larger B-Sides events outside of like Las Vegas or San Francisco that I've been to. Really well done, put on by the Mars team up there, and yeah, a great conference all around. I would recommend it. Besides the fact that Vancouver is gorgeous, right? Tucked up against the mountains on the ocean. Super cool.
Vancouver is nice. It's a good spot. Yeah. I know I was asking you about that conference last week, trying to figure out and gauge. Because, you know, always curious to try new conferences, obviously.
Yep. It's a good one. I mean, you know, I feel like we all kind of get stuck in those patterns of these are the conferences that we go to, right? And I always have conflicts every year between what LASCON and St. Con, which is local for me here. Both are good conferences, kind of depends on the audience that you want. And that nowadays there is a conference every weekend if you wanted to go to one. Between B-Sides events and OWASP events and... Yeah, it just is never ending, right?
Well, I submitted for, as I told you yesterday, St. Con because I wanted to try something new. I don't know. It probably won't get approved, but if it does, I'll be out there at St. Con with you and trying something different. I'll be very happy. Otherwise, it's probably back to LASCON. the world's best InfoSec / Quinceañera conference.
That year was amazing. one door for LASCON and the other door for the Quinceañera. I just the crossover was awesome. Was just you can't write that right. Like
I know, and it's not like it's not like a typical one where there's like big hallways and there's lots of room. And so people, it's like little, like low ceilings, low tiny ceilings. Hallways, like basically office cubicle looking things. Anyways, funny to me, but I'm not crapping on it. To be fair. I mean, I have loved LASCON and had great times there and met some of the coolest people over the years through it. In fact, I mean, that's one of the ways I met my co-founder, James, you know, he started LASCON. So, actually we were talking this morning about that, about like, the Absolute AppSec conference. We like this morning as a matter of fact, when we were doing our little sync. So definitely some, there's, sorry, nothing huge to update other than a huge desire to do it. So, but yeah, no.
I know we had started to coordinate, right? Like that is something that's coming down the pipe, but we will be promoting more about as we have a better idea of what it's going to look like.
Is Orlando, sorry, I'm looking at Robert's or Bobby's question, and I'm wondering, is it B-Sides Orlando or is it B-Sides Kissimmee? Because people always say Orlando, but then a lot of times you find out it's actually Kissimmee.
There is a B-Sides Orlando in September.
Okay. I mean, Orlando in September doesn't sound awful.
No,
it doesn't. And it is actually in Orlando. Yeah.
Submissions closed July 5th. Dang it. Bobby, now I have to submit for that. I haven't been down to Orlando for years.
Disney and hacker stuff.
Yeah. And this is it, right? Like there are just so many that you can attend. It's difficult to pick and choose. I always have this problem because it's like they all come into Hacker Tracker as well, right? Like a lot of these conferences. And you should use Hacker Tracker over InfoSec Map. I'm going to put that out there. Obviously, I'm a little bit biased there, but we're also not a for-profit company. I'm just going to leave that out there. So B-Sides Orlando, but they all come into to Hacker Tracker, and I'm always like, man, I wish I could get to that, right? On a weekly basis. But life gets in the way. That should be the theme.
Yeah.
Life does with get that in the way. Yeah. CFP. Yes, there is. I don't know if he's asking about B-Sides Orlando or about the Absolute AppSec conference.
Oh yeah, we'll probably, we'll give updates as we get more like, and when we'll give updates. We'll be asking for because we've had some people who are part of the community reach out and say, hey, I volunteer to help, and so we'll do some more. Like, I know we've been saying this for years, but for real, we are more serious now than ever. So we will ask for volunteers. We will.
We'll probably put together a board and a few other things to make it all happen so that it's not just, well, part of the problem is when it's dependent on me and Kim, we just get busy with everything else that we're trying to do, and so we let dates slip and other things, but there are other people that are already involved, organizers, so it should happen. B-Sides Orlando sounds pretty cool. The CFP is open. I did just check the website itself. I think it's Tom, like to his point about challenge, finding space, right? This is a constant issue for most nonprofits and most meetup groups, finding a regular space that, number one is inexpensive, so people can actually get there, is, accessible. It's just difficult, right? Like, but I B-Sides Cleveland would be interesting as well. Industrial area. Hey, you can wear Crocs and socks anywhere. It's amazing, right?
Codemash, to Scott's point, Codemash is great, but it's great. It's just if you're a vendor, it's a little tougher, but but if you're an attendee, it's great. If you're a speaker or attendee, it's great. I will say as a vendor, it was a little challenging. So But in any case, good stuff.
Good stuff. Let us know where you're attending, what you've got on your radar for the second half of 2026. Would love to see where people are going to be at. Would also like to send out stickers and other things. I love it when I see images of people or of conferences with like Absolute AppSec swag on or whatever else it is, right? Like always a great thing. All right. As far as articles, we've got a couple technical articles today, right? I'm not sure which one I want to start with. Let's start with the logging one because, Crocs and socks and logging is my jam. The fact that, we don't do it enough, or if we do, we, we tend to have problems with it. So let's see where I put that. This is by Alan Reyes. And this is actually an old article. I don't know if you noticed that, Ken. I'm not quite sure why it popped up in my feed, but it's an old article. It's a couple years old.
I think it was a pop from 2024 at Locomoco, wasn't it?
I think it might have been. Yeah.
But no, I like it because I'm like, this is literally like one of my biggest, this is one of the hardest things to deal with when you're building a product, like when you have a product that has a lot of, it's like you know more than most about the architecture of my system and how many different systems there really are and how many things are spread out and how many services are spread out and how decentralized it is. And the more decentralized of a setup that you have, it really does get hard to stay ahead of this stuff. I mean, you can, yeah, anyways, sorry, I'm getting ahead of ourselves. Maybe we should even just, why don't you just tell people what the article's about before I go off on tangents.
TLDR, I appreciate Alan putting this right at the top, right? There's no silver bullet, but if we put some lead bullets in the right places, we have a good shot at keeping sensitive data out of logs, right? So it is. It's a blog version of the talk he gave at Locomoco Sec 2024. You can just watch the video, flip through the slides if you would like to. But this feels very apropos because we are having constant problems with secrets. And part of this is AI related, part of it is logging related, as we're trying to get some sort of observation into these systems that we're creating because we no longer have as much control over what we're building. And so things just keep showing up in unexpected places. Logging has always been one of them. We've talked about this problem of passwords is always my favorite one, right? Like, you know, people are like, oh, well, we've never put passwords in the log, but they put, incorrect passwords. So you see somebody trying to log in with user password one, you know, incorrect password user password two, and then user successfully logged in, right? Like, so you have indicators and other things that end up in the logs that shouldn't be there. And it becomes an enumeration activity or hidden data problem that you can solve, or you can stitch things back together because of what has actually been pushed there. I do love, right? Like, you know, let's talk about the problem of secrets in logs specifically. And this is one of those difficult problems. I mean, you are definitely like living this, right?
It's really a tough challenge.
It is.
Yeah, because you can, you can put like, you can have policies in place to try and, you can have written policies like guidance. You can have actual rules or policies applied against your like pull request to make sure that code there is not, directly logging whatever. And even if it's working really well, that's great. But the thing is that there's so many system level logs, especially when you're using different cloud provider services. Things just basically like happen once the whole system's running. And sometimes it's just very difficult to detect, you know, in source code changes or things that, you know, we would typically like basically like SAST and DAST, right? From a security perspective, kind of just struggle a bit. There, like, not like, and I there's the application level, right? But I'm talking higher level, right? As the code that you develop runs on these systems, there are just things that, if you use a lot of different services, just weird things that happen that are just sometimes hard to account for. And it does not, unless you're like really munging through those logs, pretty regularly, it's not always obvious. Now, having said that, I'm curious to ask, like, given that I'm not a Datadog expert or whatever, do you know, I'm sure that they have some automated detection of sensitive things being held in your logs and notifications, I would assume?
Yeah, I mean, there is that ability, right? And it always kind of comes back to that pattern.
There's going to be somebody who hears this. Like, how does Ken not know this? But sorry, I don't know everything.
Secrets and logs. All right. Well, I'll ask, ChatGPT or somebody, right? Yeah. They do have a sensitive data scanner. Yeah.
Yeah. Bobby says they do. It's not great, though. It's probably back to the same thing that we've dealt with like, although now with AI, it should be better. But I mean, in the past, it's the same problem that the reasons we have all the legacy SaaS issues is that looking for patterns are just, it's too brittle. It's could be outside your patterns, your defined patterns. So I'm also trying to read this. So Scott said, so hard to regex credit. Yeah, exactly. Like it's really difficult to get, I'm sure the cost of running an AI agent against.
Oh yeah. So there's a sensitive data scanner. It is pattern-based as you would expect. It has the weaknesses that we would expect to see, right? Bobby, to your point, right? Like scanning every log line using an AI agent is just unacceptable. Like you've got to find some like combination of that. I'm glad that it's coming up that the cost on, you know, actually spinning up agents nowadays, people are a lot more sensitive to it. Yeah.
Brother, you're preaching to the choir on that. Like
exactly.
Anyways. It's
finally about time. Ken, I'm pretty sure you had some incident with that this week, but yeah.
Oh my god.
Scott, yeah.
Pricier.
Yeah. Anyway, we only find them when devs named them password or user ID, right? Like you've got to have canaries, right? Like the problem is hard. And I love this from the article from Alan specifically, right? Like, you know, that I'm highlighting there, he absolutely hates this problem. He's not going to gaslight us and say that it's the most important thing to work on or worry about because it probably isn't. It's just extremely frustrating because of how do I want to say this? It's frustrating because we just haven't spent the time to engineer systems that can handle this appropriately. And we don't know what we don't know, right? Usually the person running the logs or maintaining those logs is not necessarily the developer who is generating those log files. And they may have specific needs that they have to actually put stack traces or other things into the logs so they can actually debug problems that are happening. And so, we're stuck in the situation that we don't know secrets are in the logs until secrets end up in the logs because of an error condition that didn't get triggered unless we have a production outage or we have some weird integration flaw that happens and all of a sudden we're dumping objects into the log files that we didn't intend to be there, or we enabled debug logs in production because we were having a problem and now we've all of a sudden put all of these customer credentials or secrets into the log files without knowing it. We sent them off to, you know, Segment and Datadog and every third party service under the sun. And now we have a problem of credential rotation. It's just like this compounding problem that continually exists that we're never going to get away from. I don't know. Like, I mean, what is your solution, Ken? How do you get away from this?
I mean, that's why I'm here, is to learn from you, Seth, on how to not log sensitive values. No, I mean, like I said,
that's the only reason we're friends. Yeah,
right. I just come to you for my logging issues. No, it's actually it's a mixture of all these things that we've talked. So Bobby's talking about, like, for instance, having tokens that are prefixed in such a way. So like at GitHub, we did GHE underscore prefix with whatever, you know, UUID after. At Dryrun, it's, I think it's like DRS underscore is how I did it. And then the UUID, like, yes, that's helpful to make sure you don't log that. But what you mentioned is a little different, right? So, because you mentioned an object. And so like when I was at GitHub years ago, we had, we've talked about this during the code review course. We called like, I don't know, Datadog or New Relic or whatever. We called it, we imported this library. We called it, we invoked the function to log an, we thought was a string. And it's supposed to have, so it basically interpolated, it had a string and it interpolated, this is Ruby, by the way, you got to remember that. So you interpolated the word user, right? But what they meant to do is like use like just user, this like user colon and then this user ID or something like that. But then the user object was actually just interpolated as an object, not as a string. So then it just took all, the attributes. Like it's as if you had just gone into the Rails console and printed out the user object, which would have, you know, everything from your hash passwords to tokens to all kinds of nonsense. We had disclosed all this, and actually it was like minimum, like it was only, I take that back. I don't think it was to Datadog or New Relic. I think that's why we got lucky, is that it was, I think it was that we actually logged it to our internal, back when we used a thing called Haystack that we built internally, and it was deprecated later, so I can say all this. Isn't used, but it was at the time. So anyways, that was how we got lucky, is we internally logged it. So we didn't have to do like, and it was only like a handful of customers affected, or say a handful on the scale of GitHub. Right. So in the grand scheme of things, it ended up being not a huge issue. We were able to kind of clean things up internally, do like little notifications we need to do. And there was no real compromise, but it's like, how in the heck were we supposed to like look out for this one code change in a sea of code changes that was like, and you know, this is pre-AI. Now you can do that with AI, but like back then you couldn't do that, right? You couldn't just like guess all the regex patterns and all the, not just regex. I know that there's like some level of sophistication with pattern matching, but it is pattern matching. And it's not like you can create enough patterns and enough configuration ways to pop and say, oh, hey, you're about to log something crazy here accidentally. You don't know that you're turning that, what you thought was a string, into a exploded object. But anyways, so I don't know. To answer your question, I don't have one. There is no silver bullet, as he talks about in here. I think like logging, like, because one thing I was thinking about is Bobby said that, you know, he made a good point. You can't send all the logs to your AI, right? Mm-hmm. I wonder if you can't though do like certain sample sets where you take batches of sample data to see if there's anything that you should be suspicious of, and then that way you can cut costs. We probably should ask Evan from Run Reveal at some point about this, how they're handling that.
Yeah, I mean, because they are handling, you know, terabytes of log data, right? And man, the second that you start getting some PII and other data in your logs, it becomes a whole other scope creep and expansion of your security program just to protect the data that exists in those. I always think back to the initial like Target breach that happened, and all the credit cards and like the data that was stolen off of point of sale systems, right, via Wi-Fi. And part of the problem that it had was the fact that all of these nodes had log files hosted locally that contained that data, right? Before it was sent up to a centralized server, before it was processed, it had like specific private data that was accessible on all these unprotected nodes that are sitting out across the network and across all the stores. And we haven't really gotten that much better since that day. You know, yes, we have streaming systems. Yes, we have ways to push it to what we think is protected. We have pattern matching that goes into it. I think from your perspective, when you start talking to AI, that's absolutely one feather that you can add, or one arrow that you can add to your quiver to actually search. But I always go back to those unexpected conditions. I know that's and I was just like putting together some like new training and discussions around the OWASP top 10, but that last item in the OWASP top 10 now in 2025, this is mishandling of, you know, exceptional conditions, right? Is exactly the problem we're running into with logging here, is it's really difficult to predict when your system is going to fail, or how it is going to fail, and what the consequences are going to be. It's a very similar problem to what happens when we get exploited. It's almost like we have to do some sort of incident handling or incident response for secrets in the logs, so that we know how to actually properly clean them up and how to properly look at what the blast radius of this is when this actually happens.
Can I clarify on what you're saying there? Are you saying that, like, run a preemptive, pretend you had an incident to go back to the logs? Is that what you're... Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you know that you log something sensitive, you should be doing an instant response anyways. But you're talking about a preemptive one.
Yeah, but preemptively, we should be treating that like a breach, right? Like, you know, we have these incident tabletops that we run for breaches. Log should be one of those things that comes into it, because it's just it's an unknown unknown, right? Like, when things get into the logs, we're not going to know when that actually happens, and we've got to be prepared for it. I think we got to be prepared for the when and not the if.
I think you have to disclose it, right? I feel like you kind of ethically should disclose that to your customers, and so then if you do, you have to run a breach investigation to be sure that they didn't get breached.
Yeah,
which will give... I think what you're saying though is that only give you some level of guarantee. You're not the whole... you won't... it's like this. Yeah. It's like a warranty, right? It's not a guarantee, not a real guarantee. Yeah,
I know. Just stream me all your logs. I'll tell you when there's secrets in them, okay? Like, you know, we'll start yet another service that's all that it does is looks for secrets in log files. Wait, I'm pretty sure there's one of those that's out there. Somebody will tell you about it.
I bet Bobby does have a lot of really good... I'm sure you have like some real... fire to add to this conversation, because if you've done IR on this stuff, like I've only done less than a handful, we'll say, of IR on sensitive data stored in logs. And you're absolutely right. It's such a pain. It's again, that's why I was saying with distributed systems, I feel like you can never really predict the weird ways in which it's going to happen. As much as I try, I don't know. So I saw you're scrolling, so I'm seeing if you have any.
Yeah, I'm just going through all the memes, because these hit home, right? Like, oh, you know, you're not storing passwords in plain text, but you are if you have them in your logs, right? Like, it's... yeah. And then he steps through like the different ways that logging is happening, right? Like the explosion. There we go. Like air handlers. Yeah. All of a sudden you change to debug what actually happens when you flip in production from whatever to debug, embedded secrets, magic links, right? Like, I mean, there's so much here to talk about that, like, we could probably spend the whole episode on this, but
hardening the application by overwriting functions in classes, like a secret class, so that it always returns redacted. Some of it's like setting the framework level configurations so that they redact the certain sensitive parameters, but it's not all code based, right? There's got to be some level of... this is a long article. Just at choke points, because for what gets me, what I've seen is a lot of, like, seriously, like, you can get pretty far with what you do inside your application, but like, I'll give you a classic example of this just so that it's a little concrete. Like, I had an application that had it was an OAuth library. So OAuth library, and I've talked about this before, where one of the parameters was not sent to it. I think the parameter was actually like, which server do you want to point at to be like the server you auth against, federate against. In any case, there was a bug in the library itself, not in the first party application. And when that there was an issue parsing that value, it would just dump out to the logs and on the page to the person that, like, the live running app. So it would dump in the logs, it would dump on the page itself, all the environment variables, you can only guess how many secrets. We're talking probably like 28 secrets compromised immediately. And those are things that are just hard to predict. It's just hard to predict that like some library I use when you craft a parameter a certain way, causes it to break in this unexpected way where it logs environment variables, which happen to be a ton of secrets. It's like, those are just edge cases that are just sometimes hard to deal with. Just happen, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Which goes back to the incident response and the, you know, the blast radius and having some sort of a response to secrets and logs. And when that actually happens, what do you do? And how do you actually deal with it? Because it is a matter of when and not if it's going to happen. Anyone who tells you that they've got this problem solved is lying. Even though that's how it shows up in most compliance frameworks is, hey, well, we definitely make sure that we don't have secrets and logs. Yeah, you do, but there's edge cases. And that probably said for most compliance frameworks and most security issues. So that's what we're trying to prevent. So he goes through a bunch of different things that you can go through, you could do to actually prevent this. I mean, it is a layered security approach. We should be implementing multiple items from this list or multiple controls from this list, and not necessarily just depending on one, any one silver bullet to actually fix the problem, because it doesn't exist. Let's see. Expect that it will happen.
For letting us. Yeah.
For this, for giving the talk, because this is really good. I don't know, why I missed it before, but I'm glad it came up on my feed. I don't know if we need to say much more about it. If you're having problems with it, jump into Slack. We'll continue the conversation there. As far as, logs, obviously it's something that we're both passionate about and we've talked about quite a bit. Or if you think you have the bulletproof solution for logging, I'd love to hear it too, right? It's the one true way of doing your logging so that nothing ever shows up there. Maybe it's just sending it all to dev null. That's the way, right?
Well, I think that, there is some silver lining here because now that we have marketing and sales and other people building their own apps using AI, this problem should definitely, definitely decrease. So life should be
fine. Now that everyone has access to Claude, the problem just goes away because Claude knows everything anyway, right? Like once the secret's out, do you really have to protect it? We're going to have a philosophical discussion on what is a secret.
A secret is something that if you're in marketing, you give to your AI assistant so it can do good things on your behalf.
Okay.
I was joking that please don't do that. That was a joke. Don't.
That is the one piece of this that I'm going to stitch as a short to go out is, Ken telling people to give AI all your secrets. Yeah.
Oh, I know. But stop reminding us that we can't make jokes, Bobby, at their expense. I know we're supposed to be responsible and help them. I know we're supposed to secure their. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It is our job to do that.
Blah, blah, blah.
It's the current state of the apocalypse we are currently in.
So. Oh, sweet. Anyways. All right. Yeah. Never, our jobs were never supposed to exist. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so should we talk about prompt injection?
Yeah, sure. Let's talk about it. Sorry. Yeah, that's good. That's good. The 45-page PDF we're going to try, and Seth is going to interpretively dance his way through a 45-page PDF. He promised.
Yes. Okay. So LLM, OWASP top 10 for LLM applications, number one for most or interactions with LLMs in general, the number one security vulnerability that we see is prompt injection. And we've had multiple discussions on the podcast about how this feels like it should be a solved problem, We know that there are is such thing as instructions context and data context, and how we pass data into a database is important, right? Like SQL injection has been a solved issue as long as you're interacting with the database via a secure mechanism. We should be able to do the same thing with AI. However, the claim in this paper is that prompt injection is never going away. That's basically the TLDR. There is the way that these systems worked is tokenization is math based on these tokens, these language models that are being that are processing that data. They have no concept of instructions versus data. They don't, right? Everything that comes in is basically data that is then used to generate a response. It would take basically redesigning the whole model and taking away some of like the large language model definitions in order to actually solve this security problem. So how, So I mean, that's in short what it kind of comes back with, right? Like, I don't think there is a good response to solving this problem outside of telling the LLM not to fall for the problem. It's very similar to social engineering. And this is, I think this is how we've talked about it for a while, right? Is prompt injection is just social engineering, but for agents as opposed, or LLMs as opposed as for people. When people get confused and they think that the Prince of Nigeria is emailing them and it is the real Prince of Nigeria and has $2 million for them, what do? They respond, right? And yes, I'm being a little tongue in cheek here, but this is the same problem that an LLM has. An LLM gets what it thinks is trusted instructions, a trusted set of text, and responds to that in the manner that it's been trained. People do the same thing. And so it's a matter of some recognition. It's a matter of validating what's going in and what's coming out. But I don't think this is a problem that's ever going to go completely away. And it's a continual arms race on what are the new ways, what are the new techniques that we can use to successfully inject an LLM and take over its line of reasoning, take over its response mechanisms, what have you. Very similar to social engineering, phishing emails or vishing emails that actually go out. That's the way that it succeeds. I don't know, like I'm talking a lot, Ken, what are your thoughts there? You are dealing with AI agents on a daily basis. How are you protecting against this? To Bobby's point, do we actually need to solve it? And yeah, like go, I guess, right?
Oh, there's a lot, man. This is so right. Okay, well that helped. That thank you, Bobby. That because at first I was like kind of focused on Bobby's question of do we need to solve it? And I was kind of like, who's we? Maybe he has a point philosophically, he could just be joking, but there is some level to that, which is like, there's levels to that question. And one of the levels to that question is, you know, shouldn't it just by default prevent this, which is what the article argues they can't do. Because I've always said like, well, why can't you just say like, here's your system prompt, then there's your user prompt, you know, pull that data apart. I know that's like crazy oversimplification. I'm self-aware enough to know that. But at the highest of the high levels, like, you know, couldn't we, right? So I wasn't sure if that's where he was going with it. Like, can't the model providers just deal with that? He's saying, well, isn't it working as intended? And injections imply that it's not working as intended. I mean, you know, I would say that, yeah, I would say, jokes aside, if you're like one of the examples, the earliest examples of prompt injection at the Cactus Con village that they talked about was, you know, I don't exactly remember who it was. It might have been GMC or Dodge or someone. They had a chat bot and someone prompt injected it to for other users to only get results about the competitors of that automotive brand. So if it was Dodge, then it would only respond with like truck descriptions from like Toyota and Ford and GM, whatever, right? And so yeah, in that scenario, you do want to prevent it, right? Because it sucks. It's messing with your product. You know, on my end, obviously, I don't want people putting in comments in code where it, you know, our system goes to analyze something's going to say that it's vulnerable, and then it reads the comment and says, well, actually, this is intended and it's not vulnerable for XYZ reasons, and says, oh, it's not vulnerable, right? Like, that would be a bad experience on. So yes, I would say if the we is a product provider who doesn't want unintentional behavior to happen, yeah, it's got to be solved by someone. And is that an app level business flaw? Well, I mean, so you could make the argument that you're not doing a good separation of, but again, you know, it's kind of like, and yeah, there are things that we, so yes, yeah, you do have to fix that at an app level. That is kind of where the onus is at right now. It's on us to do that. And there's a myriad of ways to do that. I have a mixture of both proprietary stuff we've done internally, as well as an actual provider. We've talked about them, Ira. Yeah, you don't blame Postgres. Sorry, I'm keeping up real time with Bobby. Yeah, I agree that you don't necessarily blame Postgres for SQL injection. But if, for instance, MySQL didn't have its flow where I can send the query, get back a token that's mapped to that query, and then send my data off, and then there's an underlying mechanism there where it's automatically capable of, and now it's up to the library that you use, right? The ORM that you're using to respect that capability built into the database. So you do need like both the ORM code and you need the database itself to have that underlying core piece of functionality. And then you have to get your developers on a third level to actually use the correct ORM functionality in the correct way, but at least at the end of the day, the database exposed that capability. But the difference here that I would say is that there is no capability with LLMs. It was sort of like, yeah, we just figured you'd send us this big blob of text and we'd give you back magical answers. That's all, right? Like, that's kind of how it was engineered. There's not a lot of nuance here. One of the things the paper talks about, I think there's like five different ways it talks about how you could separate out. They do ultimately recommend that there is exactly what we're talking about, which is some level of parameterizing different. They called them context. I would say prompts would probably be the, I think they said context. I think it's a long doc. Yeah. I didn't have a lot of time to prepare, but in any case, that is still, but they're cautioned that that's not the whole solution. It's not going to fix everything. There's still going to be, you know, long running tasks where, and it tries to obey you and tries to follow directions. So there might be long running tasks where things get sort of haywire and goes off the rails. Maybe it's like second, third, fourth order, injection where, like, you know, as it's doing a long running agentic task, maybe it has to go reference something there. There's some prompt injection. It undoes the original sort of, I don't know, like, it's complex. That's what I'm trying to say. It's not as simple as a DB operation where you read something, you write something, that's it. There's a lot more going on under the hood, but ultimately that is their solution. So what this has been a long tangent. All I'm trying to say is LLMs never even gave us the capability of doing this in a more secure manner. So yep. Then trying to bake everything. Now we're trying to bake everything on at the last, what should be the last stage of protection, the last layer of the onion, is everything now, instead of being just an additional layer.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's what, I mean, I know that's partially what you've experienced. That's what I've experienced. is that yes, it feels magical, but it's more about kind of the harnesses that we build around LLMs than it is anything else. And prompt injection is the same way, right? What we intend from a business logic and a business flaw perspective from a flow that uses an AI agent should hold whether or not we have an agent behind the scenes that's actually doing some of the reasoning or other things for us. And so we've got to have stronger systems in place in front of and behind for most of these interactions that are going into it. And it will prevent things like prompt injection from actually happening. I had this recently with a client where we found some, you know, abilities to dump system prompts via what is prompt injection, right? Like, and they found that just changing models actually prevented that from happening. But the discussion became not, is this possible or will this ever be possible when we are using AI agents, to how do we actually prevent this from happening when that agent degrades, when that LLM model is changed, when we do have a different approach and a different framework for doing prompt injection that is successful against the current model as opposed to the old one where we actually knew what worked and what did not work. So we've got to engineer better systems. And that's what this paper does argue, is it goes into this context intelligence, I think is what they call it, on how to break it down so that we are providing some level of assurance that the LLM is not going off the rails through the use of these other kind of deterministic systems, right? It is to Bobby's point, right? Like, it's untrusted input, untrusted output. We're not doing any sort of validation on either of those. What do we expect is going to happen? We've always said that these systems are garbage in, garbage out. Yes, they come back and they look like they are doing some level of security, or they're doing some level of reasoning that would prevent that. But we know that it still is a system that can be exploited.
Yeah, because when you send something to I'll use Bobby's example, like Postgres. When you send something to Postgres, it's just data that's within a confined constraint. So like, meaning if let's say they didn't do any proper parameterization, right? And it was just all one big thing sent. The limit of what I can put into that additional query, or there is a limit as to what I can put into that query that will allow it to still remain effective, right? So like keywords, select, where, things like that, those are defined things that they either will work or they won't work, and it's pretty binary. It gets more complex, obviously, when we're talking about a system where it's like it's an infinite amount of things that you can say to it and it will just do things regardless, right? Period. So it's not easy to protect against. And even if you do structure out those different types of data and give it as much direction as possible, someone can just come after with some infinite, unlimited amount of things to say that might undo what those controls were set out to do, because it's now going to infer what the intent was, try to search, make mappings between different types of data to get the most relevant answer and spit something out. It's just a totally different system. But I guess my whole argument, or not argument, but let's go back to the original question, should we be solving that? Well, again, I would like to see a better distribution of the models themselves helping us prevent against some of this, but also some level of, yeah, acknowledgement. We have to have providers and security, or whatever, some whether homegrown or you buy it, there's got to be some security mechanism managing your agents. And then on top of all that, if you're an app that's building on all this stuff and you're using agents, and you also have another level of work to do. So I don't know. I just rather see it all distributed more evenly than it is like, hey, if you're using an LLM, everything's on you. Good luck.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, yeah. I mean, also, I think we've already seen some of this.
Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever. Oh, I'm good.
I mean, we've seen some of this, and like we've seen attempts to do this via some of the SDKs and other things that we use to interact with the LLMs, right? Like Lang graphs, like, oh, there's a system prompt, there's a user prompt. We're trying to like specify or at least like distinguish between the two as we're sending it to the LLM, but then the LLM doesn't necessarily line up, like the concept of that does not line up with what is coming from or what LangGraph is providing. So we have things like tags and other placeholders that we're using. That's where, you know, Pliny the Elder and that whole Libertas GitHub project actually stems from, is this ability to actually inject specific strings and control characters in that cause the jailbreak, right? For lack of a better term, the prompt or the LLM itself. Contextual integrity, what they argue here, this seems like a good framework to actually use to prevent this from happening. I don't know, right? Like it feels like the LLM space is moving so quickly, they keep adding more and more strategies during training and during development of these models that there could be better ways to go about it. I just am not in the weeds with it, right? To be able to tell you what would actually work and what doesn't. I mean, I know they have like the whole like, what is it, MOE, right? Like mix of experts that goes into this and all the other kind of fine tuning that happens with these models before they release them, that there could be other ways to approach this. And I'm sure somebody's doing some research here, but it doesn't feel like it's ever going to be completely solved. So it's like logging, right? Like logging of secrets. You've got to plan for the worst case scenario. If you don't plan for the worst case scenario, when it hits, you're not going to have experience on how to actually deal with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because you won't. And then I was kind of looking at Bobby's comment too about our existing model of untrusted input to include untrusted output. And this is something that, so like, I don't know what, I should know more about what's going on with like the Gen AI space and OWASP, but because there was an LLM top 10 and this fifth category kind of spoke to like the output part. It was called improper output handling, which some of that's about like encoding and whatever. I thought the application is vulnerable to indirect prompt injection attacks, which can allow attacker to gain. I don't know if this actually covers it well, but I thought there was a section, and there definitely is a data and modeling poisoning section to this, which may also talk about like pulling in some untrusted output, basically untrusted output that then becomes input that then whatever, you know, either becomes training data or becomes context poisoning or whatever it might be. I don't know if that project's still going on, by the way, because there's like this agentic top 10. That's why I'm a little confused on like which thing we should be using. I've defaulted to just agentic top 10. That's what I thought was the most recent checklist. But my point is that I think they're trying to kind of maybe. Yeah. Sorry, what were you going to say?
No, there's just... Yeah, I mean, there's the OWASP Gen AI security project that has at least the one LLM risks, but then there's agentic risks. There's I know that it's changed over time. Yeah, Brian was mentioning that, right? Like, I think that came up in Random or one of the other channels as to the number of different OWASP top 10 and projects for generative AI that are out there now. Because it does get fairly confusing. I did like Neil's response to this, though, right? Like that frontier providers are not coming to our rescue, right? Like they're not, right? Like they're just...
Yeah.
I don't think they have... I don't think there's an impetus there for them to do that, to be honest, right? Like unless they get punished for not having secure defaults, why would they even... think about it, because they're yeah, it's about chat and completions and everything else that goes into it.
So I have personal experience with this, where there are still open source libraries that help your web app act as an LLM client to your MCP client to your MCP servers, right? So I mentioned one of them, Ruby underscore LLM. There are others I know, because I had to look through a plethora of these open source libraries that they still haven't even upgraded to use newer. So you still have to use, like, I think some, maybe you can use like an old, now deprecated version. There was like a window where you could use what is now a deprecated version, I think, of, for instance, OpenAI's like 5X model or something. But for the most part, you pretty much have to stick with the old four models because of that. A lot of these, unless you want to like extend those libraries, which is totally doable. But my point is, if there's not enough pressure, which there isn't, on those open source libraries, that means nobody cares. Nobody's doing anything about it. I don't know. I'm just going off on a tangent again, but it is frustrating. It's just frustrating.
It is. Yeah. I mean,
you have to get running too, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I do need to call it today. These are not diligent people making these choices.
No. Yes. And then the PR goes off. I know you gotta get going. So I'm gonna keep it brief, Ron. You're absolutely right. You can look at, all I can say is look through the issues and look through the pull requests of these projects, and you can absolutely see what's going on.
Yep. It's almost like marketing and sales have turned into development. I don't know about that though, right? Like, you know.
Also, yeah. I wanted to post what Jerry Gamblin, just before we hop off real quick. No, you didn't kill the stream, Ron. Not at all. No, Seth is a busy man these days. He's very beloved and needed. But this last thing right here, slopcom.org from Jerry, man,
this looks amazing.
Please check it out. Please, if you're listening, check out slopcom.org.
Oh, AI generated CFP.
Can you zoom in on that, because it's kind of small? Do you want to read it, or should I? Because that top part is hilarious.
Our AI, submit your AI generated talks. Our sophisticated AI review committee, temperature is 0.9, max tokens 496, will evaluate all submissions with the same care and attention a human definitely would have. Right? Please note, SlopCon cannot provide DEF CON tickets, travel, or accommodation support. And does it generate it for you? Nope.
Recommended. AI hallucinate everything. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. Well,
it's just a form. Yeah, check that out. Yeah, for sure. Good times. I think that's everything for today. I do have a stop that I've got to get to, something else. Appreciate everyone. We will send out a newsletter. I did fall behind on that this last week when we were out and I was doing B-Sides Vancouver. If you haven't signed up for the newsletter, please do so. I think it's just news.appsitappsec.com. And we do try to summarize what we're going on about. And also, we include additional articles that didn't make the show for that week. Interesting things that are showing up, whether it's in Slack or other places. It's an easy way for you to keep up with what's going on with the Absolute AppSec community. Yeah, I think that's everything, Ken. Appreciate you. Thanks everybody for listening, interacting today. Bobby, Scott, Ron, always appreciate your comments. We'll get you all on at some point. And yes, there you go. You can prompt inject the newsletter summary. We will leave the slop in there. Don't worry, it will definitely make it through. Awesome. Okay, thanks everybody. We'll see y'all next week.
Thank you.